So, what happens to the stars of outrageous, groundbreaking comedy as the years go by? Angry Old Men by David Renwick, a former Monday play from 1996.
I know the worst time now will be in the middle of the night, when I'll suddenly wake up, and it'll hit me, like a knife through the heart, that he's not here anymore. I'll never see him again, talk to him again. Felix Fox no longer exists.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it, this middle of the night business. The way in which our mind reverts to an objective absolute after the conscious brain's been through a period of rest. I imagine the sensory deprivation of total darkness is a factor, because, curiously, it's less common when we wake up during the day.
Quite. Will you miss him, Vernon?
I was thinking about this on the way to the studio, and do you know, I'm sure I will. In a holistic sense, all of us are impoverished when a creative energy such as his becomes extinguished. The true extent of his legacy to modern comedy can, I suspect, never be charted. His contribution was more than merely catalytic. It was the philosopher's stone that made the whole alchemy possible.
He was a funny man.
Funny in the sense that...
Yes. Vernon, just say yes.
Well, I suppose empirically speaking, he was.
Though his humour was often quite cruel and frequently surreal, the scripts he wrote for your early radio shows left listeners rather baffled.
This is the BBC Home Service.
It may look like a crate of skeletons in dinner suits, but that's just a trick of the light programme.
And the time is just coming up to Beatrice Brook.
Which means it's time for more of your requests in another edition of Proletarian's Choice, introduced by a condescending old pillock who only does it for the luncheon vouchers.
Hello, housewives everywhere. My first letter today comes from 98-year-old Daisy Twods, who writes, "My husband Chubby is 86 years old, and last year lost both his arms and legs through voting Conservative. Yet, despite all our hideous diseases and gruesome handicaps, we both listen to your show on the radio every morning and hate it." And so for Daisy and Chubby, and for all those who, due to a clerical error at the Home Office, have been staked out naked on an anthill, here is some soft, soothing music.
Live from the slab at Max Fisheries, we present the show that made Huey Green out of a star, Richard Dimbleby out of some old mattresses, and Enoch Powell out of wedlock. The four angry men, Douglas Doyle, Felix Fox, Vernon Rees, and George Simon, with some assistance from Iris Gray, explode into life again for very little money.
A 1959 recording from BBC Archives, The Four Angry Men. And on this rather somber morning, following the death yesterday of Felix Fox at his home in North London, we're joined in the studio by two of the team's surviving members, Vernon Rees and his wife Iris, formerly Iris Gray, who appeared with the group on many occasions as, I suppose you'd say, the token female.
Very much so.
Since you retired from acting, of course, you worked with Mr. Fox as his secretary and PA. In fact, you were the last person to see him alive when you left his house yesterday evening.
If you don't count the person who killed him.
Indeed. I'm just being told that on the line now, live from his mansion home in Bel Air, Hollywood, we're joined by another of your colleagues, George Simon. Mr. Simon, a devastating moment for you, I imagine, when you heard the news. Mr. Simon? Are you there?
Yes, Alison, I'm here.
Yesterday, of course, your 60th birthday. A tragic way for it to end.
Felix and I, it was kind of like...
It's where it all began for you.
Like a gestalt thing we had together, you know, organically. We had that thing. I've spoken to it.
You spoke to him last night, minutes before he died.
I love that guy.
How did you feel, George, the moment that you actually heard he'd been...
Oh, for God's sake, isn't it very obvious how he feels? And I think we can do without your producer friend behind the glass holding up a sign that says, keep him crying. The poor man's going through hell as it is.
Iris, is that you,
George,
Iris?
We're all in a state of shock here.
We have to talk, Iris, later.
If I can return to you, Vernon.
Mm-hmm.
It's now over a quarter of a century since the four angry men last performed together. How did it work after that? Did your paths continue to cross very much, or...
Hardly at all. Our lives and careers took off in totally different directions. Though, curiously, I suspect what we're dealing with here, today, is much akin to the Kennedy experience. In years to come, all of us will remember precisely where we were and what we were doing the night Felix Fox was murdered.
You and your wife, Iris here, spent the evening at a dinner party.
Correct.
At the home of your former agent, Larry Zacks?
And his daughter. Correct. I have to say, in retrospect, there was a strong sense of cliché to the brooding storm clouds last night and the electricity in the air. The heavens had opened, though, of course, at that stage we didn't know for who.
Is it my imagination, or is your father looking better for his stroke?
I think he's unique in that respect. Crippling illnesses seem to agree with him. Father, will you let that man come down? He doesn't want to hear your entire medical life history.
What do you know what he wants to hear? He'll come down when he's ready.
I knew it. He's showing him his x-rays. His favourite ones he's had mounted onto slides. I hope your husband's got a strong constitution. Now, if you give me a hand with this sofa, Bess.
Oh, well, you stay in over, Bess, if you hope. And that rain's coming down out there.
Well, I don't want to put you to any bother, Louise.
No bother of any kind, Iris. Just grab that handle and...
Right.
Got it?
Oh.
Just get those cushions, of course. I'll get you some sheets. That's Felix, by the way. What was?
Felix Fox?
It's Felix Fox. And nothing will ever change that. Not a secretary he needs. It's a saint.
They've asked him to host a new daytime game show called Identikat. People watch videos of mystery celebrities' cats. It's very big in Finland. I did this big sell. They want him for his unique humour and waspish wit. But I suspect it's more to do with the fact his name's Felix. The producer's 24. Well, you can't expect her to know anything about comic legends.
I can still remember when you were doing those live shows from Shepherd's Bush. Father used to take us backstage to meet everyone. It was always George who had the time to spare. Vernon would be in the bar talking to a wall. Felix would be having an argument with the producer, and Douglas always seemed to be signing autographs. In fact, people who didn't want autographs always got one from Douglas. But George, he always made the effort for you to sit there in his dressing room and talk. He felt you could have stayed there all night. He wouldn't have minded a bit.
How old were you then?
16. My sister was 17.
Yes.
And then we all had our favourites. Yours was Vernon. With me, it was George. Too bad about the movies, of course. But what was that one? I got it last week on video. A Dork in New York. Where he meets Kelly LeBrock in a zoo and a parrot perches on his erection. I mean, please. Father? Will you put those barium scans back in the album and sleep? You're supposed to be resting the left side of your brain.
Who said I was using both sides? Stop crowding us.
What made you say that?
Sorry?
Vernon was my favourite.
Well, you married him.
Oh, that.
Iris, I...
Hmm?
Not wishing to be indelicate.
About what?
When the two of you got hitched up, it was... Especially as Father said, they all assumed Vernon was...
Sorry?
Well, no, it's crazy. I mean, you both are, for goodness sake. And look at Vernon. When you think how in those days he used to...
Poison his liver with 3 bottles of vodka a day.
And how he was such a neurotic in search of answers. Beating his head on a toilet seat before every show to relax. And now to have completely... Well, you have to admire the way he's turned himself around. That shows what you can achieve with years of therapy and self-analysis.
Yes, doesn't it?
Quite extraordinary.
For a specialist in rectal disorders, his abdomen is positively stacked with treasures. In purely medical terms, he really is sitting on a gold mine.
What have you been doing up there all this time?
Plus, of course, there's this astonishing thing in his hearing. He appears to possess a rather bizarre auditory version of long-sightedness. When you say something close up, he's actually quite deaf, yet sounds made some distance away. He could hear perfectly.
My uncle was just the same. No one could work out why it was.
I came across a similar thing last year when I was living among the Mekekwe. It's all to do with a form of neurological... The Mekekwe.
Pygmies.
Part of the research for my new series. Sorry, I thought I mentioned it at dinner.
Oh, right. Is God a black hole?
That's the one I'm doing for Channel 4. This is BBC Two.
Sorry, yes. The Wind in the Widow's set to Wagner.
That's the one I'm directing. This is the one I'm writing and presenting. Tracing the evolution and semiology of laughter from the Bronze Age to the present day.
Sounds fun. Well, look, your bed's all made up here. If you should want any extra blankets, the air is... Joseph, where has he been till this hour? Children, you worry yourself sick sometimes.
What time do you call this the
What time do you call this the And don't anticipate.
I got held up. Who's this?
You remember Vernon from Four Angry Men. And Iris, his wife, who used to be in all the old shows.
Vernon Reese, isn't it?
How are you, Joseph?
You were the first person to say clitoris on the radio.
I beg your pardon?
He said he was the first person to say clitoris
on the... I heard what he said. Plainly enough, thank you, Father.
I do believe he's right. That was the Catholic bishop who tied women's legs together in a reef knot. The Right Reverend Leslie Clitoris. The BBC had absolutely no idea what we were saying. They thought he was the chap who wrote The Saint.
A bit juvenile, wasn't it?
I suppose it was, in a way. It's all rather tied up with what one was then and that whole sexual sea change of the 60s. In a sense, most of our targets were so easy, they became difficult.
Is that why you became an alcoholic?
Pardon me?
He said, is that why you became an alcoholic? Is everyone deaf down there?
I think maybe you said it is time. Excuse me a second.
It's true. I did consume an obscene amount of alcohol during those early years, which I only realized much later was all to do with my anxieties about work. For ages, I could never understand why a particular joke got a laugh and another didn't.
So how do you know whether something's funny?
Ah, well, broadly, a comic charge will only be generated by the induced automation of human predicament, given, obviously, that the conceit springs from a well of critical perception. It can distort, yet it must reflect. You go to a fairground and see yourself in a large, rippled mirror, and you laugh.
Do you?
Well, I personally don't. It's just an illustration.
So why did you give it all up to become a theatre director?
3 seasons with the RSC, suddenly I'm a theatre director. Yes, I dabble, it's true. Why did I give up? Well, we were doing a show in Southampton, I think it was, in support of the Vietnamese Buddhists, and we suddenly realised the subatomic forces that had kept us in mutual spin had gone into reverse, you know? George had several offers from America to go and make Farting Academy 3, or some such masterpiece, and Douglas, who was always stunningly less talented than the rest of us, and I say that with no disrespect because he was already into various media consultancy schemes. And so, through a kind of mutual treaty of Utrecht, we wound the whole thing up.
Our English mistress said your version of The Tempest, set in Bloomingdale's department store, was pretentious drivel.
Did she? Did she? Well, she was probably right. The Zionist metaphor never did quite come into focus.
What other subjects are you taking, Joseph, apart from English?
French, maths, physics, chemistry, music, and economics.
Any idea yet what use you're going to put them to?
I'm going to become a magician.
A magician?
Very exotic.
I make all my own tricks now. You want to see one?
Well, it is a little late.
Of course we would. Love to. What is it?
Okay. Wait here. I'll go and get it.
How exciting. Well, this is going to be interesting at any rate.
What do you mean?
Nice double bed for the two of us. It'll be something of a first.
Yes. Well, it's no problem. I'll sleep on the floor.
Oh, anyway, it's obvious she knows. Everyone knows. Even at the wedding 30 years ago, everyone knew. Didn't you notice? Then the priest declared us man and wife. He kept tapping his nose and winking.
That's one child dealt with. Where's the other one gone?
Oh, he's going to show us one of his magic tricks.
Oh, dear.
Of course, I remember now. He was always mad about magic, wasn't he? Didn't his father buy him a conjuring set one year?
Yes, ironically, just before he disappeared with his secretary.
Oh.
Look, Iris, I don't think you quite realise what you're letting yourself in for.
Here we are. Just park it in the middle there.
Oh, thank goodness. I was expecting a card trick. Whatever did you put this together? It's enormous.
It's a standard-sized magic cabinet. Nothing special.
Oh, Joseph, I don't think at this time of night Vernon and Iris are particularly interested in...
Come on, Mum. You going to get inside for me?
Do we have to go through the charade?
Please.
It does my nerves no good at all. I want you to be aware of that.
Can we cut out all the hocus pocus inside and make it quick?
There should be music with all this, obviously, but, now, the door's closed and we drop in the box in the front here like so. Turn the cabinet all the way round. Now rattle about and give us a shout to show you're in there.
Rattle, rattle, rattle.
And you've seen all the way round the box?
Yes.
Okay, Vernon, if you want to drop the bolts now and open up...
Right. She's gone!
And Iris, if you'd open that door over there, to the hall...
Behold! How did I do?
My God! I am utterly amazed! That is really amazing, David. Don't you think that's totally amazing, Vernon?
Yes.
And now I really think it's ready by this time, don't you? So if we can just wheel this monstrosity into the corner, young man, and let Vernon and Iris get a bit of shut up. They've both had a long day, and so have I. Come on. See you both in the morning. See you tonight, Iris.
See you in the morning. Right. So it's me in the bed and you on the armchair.
Right.
Oh, yes, here we are. I forgot. Another note from Felix?
Dear, what's the duffy old fool got to say this time?
Talking about the four of you getting together to do a Stop the War concert. And before you say it, I cried. Do you think he'll listen? Tell him the United States Marines are hardly going to be driven out of Nicaragua by a bunch of aging comedians. He looks on you as some kind of Nazi sympathizer.
Yes, I know. Next week it'll be the ice caps again. Let's all dress up in carrot costumes to combat global warming.
Well, he'd appreciate a reply.
I'll drop him a line in the morning.
Okay, if I switch the light off now. Night, then.
Night, Iris.
I wonder what it would have been like if we had ever slept together. Ah, never a basis for marriage, was it? More a case of mopping up the leftovers.
You know what I think, Iris?
What?
There must be a false panel in the back.
What?
Which he somehow slipped through while our attention was diverted. Of course, yes, it was very cleverly done.
Look, what? Will you leave that thing alone?
That's solid enough. So how did she get from here and out there behind that door without... There's probably a simple explanation here somewhere. What I really need is a very fine bradawl.
Will you come out of there? I don't believe this.
Aha! What have we here?
Can't you let it be? It was a very clever trick. Just leave it at that.
Absolutely ingenious. I have forgotten that for 14 years old. Iris.
Go back to bed.
Iris, I think you're going to have to give me a hand. I seem to be inextricably trapped.
God, Beth. Hang on a second. Where are you?
I'm in the bed. There appears to be some form of automatic spring-activated panel.
What am I looking for in here?
I don't know. A tiny switch or lever of some kind.
What are you trying to do?
The front door's shut now. I can't get out either.
What do you mean? How can it be shut?
I don't know, but it is. We'll have to get out through the back door.
There isn't a back door.
You said there was.
I know I said there was, but there isn't. The back panel's solid plywood secured with 1.5-inch countersunk screws at 2-inch intervals round each edge. Don't bang the pump like that and wake people up.
I'm trying to wake people up. We'll have to get Joseph down to let us out.
I'm mad. Admit we can't fathom out the simplest child's conjuring trick. Let's just apply a little lateral thought to the problem. There you are. It's obvious. Mesmerism.
What?
He hypnotized us and got her out of the box while we were still in a trance. Yes, of course. Looked at laterally, it's obvious.
He's finally gone. I come out for a quiet dinner party. I end up in a Chinese torture chamber with Edward de Bono. A crazy person who used to be my husband.
What's that supposed to mean?
Marriage of convenience. God knows what was convenient about it now.
We had something that held us together. What happened to it?
You stopped drinking it. The drinking I could cope with. When you wore those Dracula teeth to the Grosvenor and leapt on stage to bite Princess Anne on the neck, it was endearing. There was a certain vulnerability. Now you're so invulnerable, it's not true.
I have to say, Iris, I find with increasing frequency these days that I don't understand you. Don't you have any desire to know how he did it?
If I knew how he did it, it wouldn't be fun. You remember fun, Vernon? It's what you had before you started rationalizing and intellectualizing every bloody thing under us. Oh, God. I can't breathe anymore. I'm suffocating.
What? You mean suffocating in a metaphorical sense? Or?
Not in a metaphorical sense. In a going blue in the face and dying sense. I've got to get out of this bloody box.
He's coming up down there.
Joseph? Oh, thank goodness.
Don't tell him where we are.
We're in the cabinet. We got him in Kira's one word work, and we both got stuck.
Hang about, then. Just a sec.
Oh, you're a lifesaver. Thank you.
All right. I give up, Joseph. How is it done?
What?
How did she get out of the box into the hall? She didn't get through the floor or the wall. The back doesn't open. It's completely and utterly impossible.
But if I told you, it wouldn't be impossible anymore. And then you wouldn't be amazed.
I don't want to be stunning amazed. I want to know how it's done.
Well, you can just set off then. Good night, Iris.
Come back here, you self-satisfied, arrogant little bastard. God, what is he like?
What's he doing now?
What does he look like? Preparing to get seriously smashed out of my head.
That's your mobile. Hello. Hello. Speaking. Yes. Well, I left him, I suppose, about 7:45. When? No. Oh, no.
What? Who is it?
Police. Felix has been murdered.
Come in, Spilsley.
Yes, sir.
Spilsley, I've been taking a long, hard look at your projection this morning.
Oh, yes, sir?
And I find it limp, Spilsley.
It is a limp projection, sir. I realise that.
My look was long and hard. Your projection was limp and flaccid, Spilsley.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, sir.
Not for the first time, Spilsley. I see you're projecting a net loss for the quarter in the domestic sales of consolidated VAT on it.
Yes, sir.
Never mind, yes, sir, Spilsley. I'm waiting for an explanation.
Well, sir, it is a generally recognised tenet of economics, sir, that the demand for bat vomit among the general public during a recession is not high, sir.
That's negative thinking, Spilsley. It's all a question of creative marketing. Offer them a free dead gorilla with every purchase, then you'll see sales rocket.
Oh, yes, we did try that, sir, but I'm afraid the dead gorillas haven't exactly been going like hotcakes, sir. More like dead gorillas.
What about the... Are you sucking something, Spilsley?
No, sir. But if you'd like me to, sir...
Don't be presumptuous, Spilsley.
No, sir. You see, sir, the problem is people don't actually want to buy bat vomit, sir. And you can't make people buy something they don't want to.
Spilsley, heresy is a very serious offence within this company, and in view of that last remark, I've no alternative but to have you torn apart by a pack of rabid dogs.
Fair enough, sir.
Terrific stuff, just terrific.
I have to say that one stands up rather well.
I don't know whether to laugh or cry.
The timeless comedy of The Four Angry Men from one of their early shows there on BBC Two. And we've been joined now by the final member of the team, Douglas Doyle.
Good morning.
Now a highly successful businessman with, I suppose we'd say, quite a commercial empire to his name. Does it bring it all back to you, Douglas, listening to that sketch?
It does, Alison. And you know... It's the most curious thing. Although Vernon here and I haven't met face to face now for, what, 13 years?
I don't recall.
The moment I walked into the studio just now, it was like we'd never been apart. Because that's how strong and precious it was. The five of us, George and Vernon, lovely Iris here and dear old Felix. Friendships forged in the springtime of one's life, which time can never erase. It's no exaggeration, Alison, to say that this morning... I've lost a limb.
Actually, I think you'll find that is an exaggeration, Douglas.
In fact, I was listening to your remark earlier, coming here in the car, you know, about what we were all doing the day he died. As it happened, I was in Brighton all day yesterday at the Grand Hotel on business, and it's the strangest thing, but you could say a ghost from the past came back to haunt me. Terrific! How are spaghetti hoops looking? Terrific! I think that's one for Ridley, don't you? I think so. Baker for it. I'm still waiting to see the storyboards, but keep Dennis Healy on a back burner. Yep. No, sorry. Hang on. I'm just going to close the window here. Say again. Okay. But have a word with Michael, Tony. Talk to Michael. Tell him 12 and a half and we have to have Australia and a big, big piece of Canada. Terrific. Okay. Bye for now. Bye. Messages. Messages. Sally? Douglas? Anything for me, my sweetheart? Mr. Fox? What time? No, he needn't bother. I know what that's about. He's got some harebrained idea about the old group reforming to do a protest show against the war. I think it's rearrange off-bugger into a well-known phrase or saying, don't you? What else? Any calls from Charles at all? Charles? Petal? I'm at the Grand Hotel Brighton for a major conference on the environment with a red carpet outside. We're not expecting Charles Aznavour, my darling. After we met at the Mansion House, I dropped his office a note offering our services to promote his new enterprise initiative. I just thought he might have called that. Oh, all right, leave it with me. I've got to go. Bye for now. Francis, how are you? Terrific to see you.
Douglas, before I go on, I don't know. I've been having second thoughts. Oh! I don't think you've met my wife, Claire.
Claire, March 1975, teacher training college, Isleworth, wasn't it?
My God!
I was launching our first corporate studies film, Let That Be a Lesson.
Explaining the government's education policy with Charlie Drake and Bernard Fresswell, that's right! I'm astounded, Mrs. Doyle, it was 20 years ago. We spoke for, must have been all of 45 seconds.
You were wearing some delightful little clasp earrings, I think I remarked on them.
You did? You said, love the earrings, my settle there too.
Anyway, the thing is, Douglas, I've been rereading this speech and...
I didn't take them off for a month. It was like meeting the Queen.
Darling.
I'm sorry. Shut up, Claire. Sorry.
I've been looking at some of these jokes again, Douglas, and wondering if I shouldn't just keep it straight.
Hmm?
When all's said and done, I'm a government minister. What if no one laughs at me?
That's not a risk I've ever taken into my calculations, Francis.
Darling, the whole point of having an image consultant is to brighten up your image.
Listen, would you both excuse me for 2 seconds? I've just remembered I have to make one more quick call. It's someone's birthday, and he'll murder me if I forget, so...
Oh, don't be silly, Mr. Doyle, of course.
Yeah, might not be there, of course. Probably out celebrating with Jack Nicholson or Kevin Costner or somebody. Hollywood stars.
Hollywood. You hear that, darling? Kevin Costner.
George! Happy birthday, Dougie Doyle. I'm terrific. How's the smog on your sinuses? Sorry? Oh, you know, wheels within wheels. Talking to the Prince of Wales a couple of weeks back, actually, might be a nibble for us there with his new Inner Cities campaign. He's due here at the Brighton Grand very shortly. I'm hoping we can do business. But listen, George, I just wanted to wish you a terrific 60th. I've got some meetings next month in Oakland. Maybe we can meet up, make a brunch in Malibu. That's right, George. But go easy on the hash browns. Okay. Love and hugs to Josie. Bye, George.
George Simon, just like that, on the phone.
George, he's a cutie. Now, where were we? Your speech, Francis.
The time is getting on.
Indeed it is. So how about we have a quick glance at page two here?
Yes, right. You may have heard the leader of the opposition the other day outlining his plans for energy conservation. I suggest he might start the ball rolling by saving his breath.
Funny, you see, big laugh there.
You think so?
Very big laugh.
He talked about more investment to harness wind power. Well, one of his House of Commons speeches would heat every house in Llandudno. Now, it's not for me to...
And again there, don't rush it, Francis.
Nor is it true to say the Right Honourable Gentleman lacks charisma. I'm sorry, who was I talking about? By his own account...
Sorry, Francis, I think it'll work better if you act that a little more truth. You know, nor is it true to say he lacks charisma. I'm sorry, who was I talking about? You see, he's got so much charisma, 5 seconds later you've forgotten who he is. You see, is actually... the joke.
Oh, I see. That's very funny. How do you think of these things?
Actually, darling, I've just seen the time.
Right. Yes. Well, that's been quite useful, Douglas. Funnily enough, that line's made all the difference. I think I've got a handle on it now. Thank you.
Are you coming down, Mr. Doyle?
Well, I prefer to watch the live coverage on TV, see what they're doing with camera angles.
Well, see you after, perhaps.
Best of luck, Francis. You're going to sail through, I know. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, dear. Lovely hearing.
Thank you.
Oh, God. Douglas Doyle. Yes? Charles who? Oh, Charles. I'm so sorry, sir. I wasn't expecting... Yes. We're all looking forward to your speech tonight, sir. Absolutely, sir. That would be terrific. My services are at your disposal. I'll be there, sir. 20 minutes... I'm thrilled. Not a problem, sir. Bye for now. My God! Now, don't panic. He's not here yet. He's still in his car. He wants to see you. That means you're in. Just think of him as a rich Arab. 20 minutes. It's now 7:46. It's time for another bath. Yes?
You're an elusive will-o'-the-wisp, Mr. Doyle. I rang your head office. They gave me a 16-digit number, which was answered by a cabin steward in a DC-10 somewhere over Greenland, who said he hadn't seen you since Tuesday.
What? I'm sorry. Have we met?
Railbrook. Chief Inspector John. Sutton Constabulary. Close the door. This won't take up much of your time, Mr. Doyle. I've come to arrest you for living off immoral earnings.
Is this some sort of joke?
That depends how warped your sense of humour is. I certainly had a good laugh over it.
Look, you've caught me at a very awkward moment.
Good. Mr. Doyle, have you heard anything on the news about a decision to reroute the River Euphrates?
No.
In that case, I think your bath is overflowing.
Oh, my God. Chief Inspector, would you mind coming to the point?
Mr. Doyle, are you the owner of an establishment known as the Tollgate Park Hotel, Carshalton?
It's more than likely. I've acquired a number of ancillary venues over the years for business purposes.
I don't doubt it for an instant. Unfortunately, one man's ancillary venue is another man's drive-in knocking shop, if you get my drift.
I don't think I do.
Well, let me put it this way. At the Tollgate Park, if you tell room service you'd like a stiff Jim Beam, they're not likely to send you up a glass of bourbon.
I notice on this brochure the place is advertised as a country health club. A claim I sent several of my men along to investigate, and most of them came back drained of what little health they had in the first place. All of which is not to mention the dungeons.
Dungeons?
I wasn't going to mention them. But since you've winkled it out of me, 6 rooms in the basement are reserved for clientele with more exotic tastes. Quarters where the discerning businessman can relax away his cares, suspended upside down from a hook, being flogged by a woman in a gas mask. I can't see it myself, but then I never went to public school. However, there is the small matter of public decency at stake.
Absolutely. So why don't you give my office a ring? First thing in the morning, they can sort it all out. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got a very pressing in.
I wouldn't bother with that door, Mr. Doyle. I'm afraid it's locked.
Where's the key gone?
Looking for this, Mr. Doyle?
Now look, Inspector. In 15 minutes from now, I have some vitally important business to discuss with His Highness, the Prince of Wales. Next to which, the alleged shenanigans at some hotel I may or may not own in Carsalton pale into an oblivion of insignificance.
I have no doubt at all that you're right.
So are you going to give me that bloody key?
You're quite at liberty to take it by force, Mr. Doyle, but I must warn you, I'm fitted with an anti-rape device.
I get the distinct feeling there's more to all this than... Just a second. Railbrook. There was a police officer named Railbrook. 20-odd years ago, he led the prosecution against our first book on grounds of obscenity.
Enid Blyton's good VD clinic guy.
He'd be 75 years old by now.
My father, Mr. Doyle. Deceased these past 7 years.
Oh.
He died of a stress-related coronary. Brought on, we always felt, by 12 months of personal vilification on the Four Angry Men show.
Oh.
Having defeated him in court, you went on to pillory and poke fun at him on the air via the character Chief Inspector Dripdry. Catchphrase, kiss my truncheon. Whose aversion to sex and matters of the flesh led him to having his private parts amputated and replaced with a small floral arrangement. A part you played to perfection, I have to say.
It's ironic, Chief Inspector. You should lay these charges at my door.
You were the one who set it all up.
Yeah. Well, I put the original radio pilot together. It's true. Vernon I knew from university as a humorist of rather undisciplined brilliance. George had seen to a very funny set of impressions of different world leaders in the bathroom, Ho Chi Minh flossing his teeth and so on. Felix, I first met in George's back garden one afternoon, lying under a cucumber frame with his flies open. And Iris looked very good in a sequin leotard. Not as good as Vernon, but perfectly adequate. She wasn't very funny, but women aren't, are they? They're not as mad as us, somehow, but... To be honest, John, I'm so pleased you've called here today. It's given me an opportunity to apologise for all the hurt your family must have suffered at our hands over the years. Another time, perhaps, we could have a wee drink and drown our differences. But I'm sure you've got other matters to attend to, so...
Not at all, Mr. Doyle. I'm in no hurry to go anywhere.
Chief Inspector, please. I'm begging you on bended knees...
I don't see any evidence of it.
What?
Begging me on bended knees.
What? Oh. Now, the key, please, Chief Inspector. You've made your point. I've apologised. I've repented. What more can I do?
You could crawl.
What?
While you're down there, Mr. Doyle, just crawl around the floor for a bit. Over to that wall and back.
Oh, for the love of...
I didn't write any of it, you know. Felix Fox is the one you want. I was always trying to tone it down. I was always saying, come on, lads, are we going a bit far here? But they wouldn't listen. No one ever listened to me.
All right, thank you, Mr. Doyle. I think that's enough.
Oh, thank you. Can I go now?
No.
But you just... Oh, God!
What's it worth to you, Mr. Doyle?
What?
This key. The key to patronage. Prestige. The pinnacle of power. I'd say it had to be worth at least £100.
I'll get my checkbook. Railbrook with an A-E, isn't it?
You sure about this, Mr. Doyle?
Well, keys aren't cheap. After all, £100 is the least I can offer.
You're right. Should really be £1,000?
£1,000? Right. Not a problem. £1,000! Try getting one for less these days.
No, this is silly. I wouldn't insult you like that, Mr. Doyle.
Insult me?
I couldn't. No. Not for less than £100,000.
£100,000.
I may get nearly 8 o'clock. What time was your meeting with HRH?
£100,000. Payable to cash,
if you would, please. My goodness. Thank you, Mr. Doyle. I don't know what to say.
The key, please.
Sorry?
The very expensive key in your hand, Chief Inspector.
Ah, yes. I'm afraid there's a slight problem there, Mr. Doyle, in that you may have trouble finding a hole to put it in. Your best bet would be to flick the little lever back just next to the knob. I find that usually gets results.
What? Well, you...
I don't believe this. Not a bad little routine, would you say, Mr. Doyle? Co-scripted, I have to confess, with my colleague, Detective Inspector Waverley. He bet £20 you'd never fall for it. Unfortunately, I bet £20 you'd never fall for it as well. But then, well, what's money, Mr. Doyle?
What?
You'll forgive me if I don't bank this check. I'd flush it down the toilet, but I don't want to pollute the sewers. I came here to say my piece, and I've said it. The funny thing is, I think I'd have had more respect for you if you'd stood by your past misdeeds. A small demonstration of integrity, perhaps. Of principle. Well, we're long past the age of miracles. Have a good meeting with his nibs upstairs, won't you? And if you could try and limit all the bowing and scraping. Must be hell for a poor bugger's back.
Oh, God. Oh.
Tonight, on Drone Something Tedious, we investigate the case of Mr. Stanley Goose Giblet, a 43-year-old hemorrhoid sufferer of long standing, who, while in police custody for cycling without lights, claims that senior officers forced him to confess to 13 unsolved murders by rolling his tongue into a typewriter and playing a selection of top 10 hits by Frank Ifield. He further alleges that when he asked to see a solicitor, they stapled his scrotum to a billiard table, connected his nipples by jump leads to the battery of a Ford Anglia, and then took him down to the cells where they beat him mercilessly at Scrabble. Well, with me here in the studio from the Metropolitan Police is Chief Inspector Gerald Drip Dry. Chief Inspector Drip Dry, how do you feel about these surely very serious allegations? Chief Inspector, thank you. And will you marry me?
Lambeth Register Office at 10.
And don't be late.
You see, what I love there is that twist of genius at the end. After this deliciously barbed observation about police brutality, just when you expect it to sign off, as any other sketch would, you get this mad proposal of marriage taking it right off onto another plane.
Although, interestingly, when we did that one on stage, Douglas always insisted that George played Drip Drive to avoid any suggestion that he might be gay.
Not remotely true, Vernon. I just thought he did it much better than me.
Oh, yes. Always very conscious of his image, Douglas, even in those days. Am I right, George?
Oh, yeah, tell me about it.
With all due respect, if we're talking about flaunting our hormones, I think George Simon was a little more conscientious than me in that department.
You're listening to Alison Kellner from 11 through to 1, talking to Douglas Doyle, Vernon Rees, Iris Gray, and live from Los Angeles, George Simon, about their one-time comedy partner, Felix Fox, whose body was found late last night with 2 bullets in his back. George, as we've said, yesterday was your 60th birthday.
You love reminding me of that, don't you?
And I gather Felix had telephoned you yesterday evening to wish you many happy returns.
Well, actually, I rang him. Felix never rang. He always wrote. He sent me this letter about this, this, you know, idea for a show. to get America out of Nicaragua with, which I would have loved to have said, great, Felix, just, you know, name the time and place. You know, unfortunately, there were factors in my life that kind of made that impossible.
Factors such as what?
Well, factors.
I'm sorry.
Oh, come on, George. Oh, you're not going to tell me you never did it underwater before. It's a really natural experience.
I do not know what's natural about having sex while you're drowning. Lungs are full of chlorine now.
Well, how do you think turtles do it?
I would imagine without having to unroll a condom that keeps floating to the surface every 5 seconds.
Oh, God. Look at that. Look on my foot. That's blood.
I definitely stepped on something in this pool. But what if it's a used syringe? I could be HIV positive. I could be dead in 10 years.
Stop worrying. You could be dead in 10 years anyway.
Oh, you don't know what weirdos and crazies break into these grounds at night, shooting themselves up and dancing naked beneath a full moon with gerbils up their bottoms.
I wonder why you're so obsessed with death always.
Because I'm worried how it'll affect my social life.
Oh, come here. Let me dry your back.
Oh, Spain. Oh, you handle me better than any agent. Oh, you're everything a man could want in a wife.
Don't tell me. Tell your wife.
Hey, where are you going?
To get dressed, to return to my duties, my other duties.
No, Spain, look, I'm still trying to find a way of putting it delicately that doesn't dwell on the fact that I've been shafting our children's nanny for the last 3 months whenever she was out of the house. I mean, look, I hate to think. Well, oh, great. Which one's that?
That's Winona. It's diaper time.
I've got so many now, I'm starting to lose track.
Right, you got Winona and Rhoda by Josie, Mindy and JC by Joni, Lisa by Lucy, and Mickey and Minnie by Morgan.
Mickey and Minnie. I can't believe I did that.
They can't believe you did that. Maybe that's why Mickey joined the army, to forget. Oh, I'm coming, Angel. Love your birthday, boy.
What am I going to do about this foot? I have some sticking plasters here somewhere. Oh, go away. I'm sorry, yeah.
Hi, you've come through to the private extension of George Simon. I'm sorry I can't take your call right now, but I'm sodomizing a horse.
Hey, old Silver! And a what?
But if you'd like to leave a message, please speak after the beep.
George! Happy birthday!
Oh, God, it's Captain Terrific!
I'm terrific! How's the smog on your sinuses?
Terrible!
Sorry? Oh, you know, wheels within wheels. Talking to the Prince of Wales a couple of weeks back, actually.
Pardon?
Might be a nibble for
us. Who's he talking to? I am not here, remember? I am not here! And I resent being used to impress your crappy old business clients, whoever they are.
I wish you a terrific 60th. I've got some meetings next month in Oakland. Maybe we can meet up, make a brunch in Malibu?
Thank you, Douglas. I'd rather have a yeast infection for the weekend.
That's right, George. We'll go easy on the hash browns. Okay, then. Love and hugs to Josie. Bye, George.
You oily fat pillock! Where are we?
Yes, George.
Oh, yeah, Kelly. Get me Dougie Doyle on his mobile. Top. Yeah, sure, I'd love to have brunch with you, Douglas. You and the Manson family. Oh, where did this lot come from? Got more sodding birthday presents. Here's to a happy one, George. If you ever get tired of working for CBS, you've got our number. NB Senior. Morris and all the gang. Oh, not a bad little briefcase. Nice leather. Oh, wouldn't it be funny if there was a movie script inside? Oh, yes. What a surprise. When you're through reading your cards, maybe we could run this one by you. It's a really sensitive comedy about a man with leukemia who finds love with a young paraplegic when they go to New England to die among the pine forests.
Oh, great! Oh, my sight is aching from laughter already.
I think I'm waiting through that load of crap. I've got plenty of my own crap to get through first. Which I suppose I can't put off any longer. Where did you go? Episode 3, 12th season. Oh, God, 12th. I can't have done 12 years of this. Scene 4.
What's up, honey? You look like you found a skunk in your trunk.
What's up? My wife announces she's sleeping with an air stewardess. I'm not going to dance in the street shouting, whoop-de-doo.
Oh, Felix Fox, where are you?
George, I've got Mr. Doyle for you now.
Oh, great, put me on.
Douglas Doyle.
Mr. Doyle?
Yes?
Mr. Doyle, it's Charles.
Charles who?
We met a couple of weeks ago at the mansion house.
Oh, Charles. I'm so sorry, sir. I wasn't expecting...
look, I'm in the car on my way to the hotel.
Yes. We're all looking forward to your speech tonight, sir.
I just wondered if you'd be sort of available for a chat beforehand. I thought we might be able to collaborate on the promotional side of things.
Absolutely, sir. That would be terrific. My services are at your disposal.
Well, if you'd like to come to my suite, shall we say 20 minutes? Sort of make yourself known to my people and everything?
I'll be there, sir. 20 minutes? I'm thrilled.
Oh, jolly good then, Douglas. I'll see you then.
Not a problem, sir. Bye for now.
Bastard! I hope they kick him down the lift shaft. Now then.
Honey, you have a real hostility problem.
Susan, General Custer had a hostility problem. I don't have a hostility problem. That'd be funny if I just screamed that. I do not have a hostility problem!
That's only your opinion.
Oh, hi, babe. You're back early. Where'd you go, Fernando's?
Right. While I was in the rest room, I ran into Sherry Hughes. She wanted to know why you weren't at the British Academy Awards last month. Was it some kind of political statement? I said no, it was just simple cowardice. You were too terrified to fly anymore. And then we got on to discussing your neurosis in general, your hypochondria, your pyrophobia, and your irrational fear of spontaneous combustion. And she said it was a real shame to hear that because she was doing a picture in the UK next summer, which she considered offering to you, but now, well, maybe she'd go with Gene Hackman instead.
Gene Hackman! What a pity I wasn't in the ladies' room with you. You could have just flushed me down the lavatory. Don't you realise what a break that would be for me from all this wall-to-wall puke I'm doing on the network every week?
Well, I hope you haven't forgotten, George. My sister's pool warming this afternoon. We really should leave around 3.
Oh, goody, goody gumdrops. I can hardly contain my ecstasy.
Angela?
Yes, Quentin?
Tell me the truth. Angela, you don't find me attractive anymore, do you? What is it that's come between us?
Well, if you really want to know, Quentin, it's about 500 tons of whale blubber.
You never did approve of my operation, did you? I had hoped you'd understand that it wouldn't make any difference to us. I see now I was wrong.
Quentin, a whale change is a very big step for a man to take. And stop doing that. You're wetting the bed.
I'm sorry, Angela. It's just that ever since I reached puberty, I've had this feeling that I was a giant marine organism with 4 fins and a blowhole trapped inside a man's body. Surely you must have...
Daddy? Daddy? What did you do in the war, Daddy? Daddy! Daddy! I'm afraid she got killed. Is that why he keeps sliding along the ground when he takes the dog for a walk?
Yes. I'm afraid it is.
Ah. Oh, good. I'm pleased to see you spent the last half hour doing something constructive in here. Have you finished playing this now? I'll go and get an air freshener.
She was bloody good hearing that again. I'd forgotten how good she was. Iris Grey. I remember it took 11 takes to do that whale sketch. Every time she said, "You're wetting the bed." Just wait. By the end, she was chewing the studio carpet. We had to beat the soles of her feet with microphone leads before she could carry on.
She sounds a real stitch.
47 shows we did all together for radio. Got all of them, except one.
Series 4, show 5.
Yep, Series 4, show 5. If the bloody BBC hadn't wiped them all, that was the one with the exploding choir boys on. Haven't heard that in 25 years.
Call me insensitive. I really fail to see how the violent maiming of young children in a church can be considered humorous. Anyway, I'm just going to get the car out of the garage, okay? I would appreciate you being ready when I get back.
Yeah, right. I've got to try to make one quick call. You better be in, you bugger. Come on.
Hello.
Congratulations, Felix Fox. You have been selected to take part in another edition of Celebrity Gargling, introduced by me, Algernon French, wearing diamante earrings. Now, for £3.17, can you identify this well-known person treating a serious throat infection?
Is it the Nazi war criminal Adolf Eichmann?
I'm sorry. It was actually his twin sister, Doris. So I can only give you half.
Thank you. I'll take that half in ones.
What's happened? You okay?
Yes, I just spilled cocoa down my shirt.
You don't drink cocoa?
No, I just spill it down my shirt.
Yeah, you sound a bit croaky.
Yes, I'm expecting to croak any minute.
Listen, listen, I've got your letter here, I think it's a great idea. I think it's a terrific idea, but...
That's okay, George. I know how it is. You don't need to apologise.
No, no question of that. Look, I'll call you tomorrow and we can discuss it then. Yeah, I've got to dash. Give Iris a big slobbery one for me, won't you? And keep smiling, you miserable old sod. I love you!
Discuss once tomorrow.
God, will you stop creeping up on me like that? That was Felix. Yeah, he wants us to get together for a Stop the War show.
Hope you told him exactly what you thought about that idea.
What do you mean?
What do I mean? You have a 20-year-old son serving down there in the United States Army. I just think it might be considered a tad unpatriotic to go capering around a stage with a bunch of ideological spastics who never had to put their life on the line for something they really believed in.
Listen, don't start knocking those ideological spastics. They're the reason I'm here today. And if I want to caper around a stage with them, I will.
I'm stunned. I really don't believe you just said that. Does Mickey mean nothing to you?
Mickey means everything to me.
Have you any idea the shame and disgrace he would feel?
I'd rather he came home in disgrace than a black bag with a zip up it. And who sent him there? I didn't send him there.
Oh, any father could
some
be
arsehole
so.
In Capitol Hill who sandpapers his head every morning.
Embarking on the most heroic act of his life.
Who, in any case, is my son, not yours.
I happen to love him too, George.
You love him?
Of course I love him.
Not like I love him, you don't love him.
No, not like you love him, but I still love him, George.
And that's the difference.
God, how I love
him. If you loved him like I love him, you'd know what he means to me.
I love this separate man.
And why I don't want to lose him in some farty little war.
I'm going to have his baby.
That's more about saving face than saving lives. I mean, when you think about some of them... What did you just say?
I'm going to have Mickey's baby. I never found an easy way of telling you. We've had sex 53 times, mostly in hotels when he got leave.
53 times?
I kept a record with my lawyer's suggestion.
Needle, Balm, Fleischer, or Zeiss?
Zeiss.
I don't know how to respond to this. You... And Mickey? All the times I've thought about that moment when my eldest son would come home and say, "Dad, this is the girl I plan to marry. She's sweet. She's beautiful. She's special. She's your wife." How could you do a thing like this to me?
How could I do it to you?
Try how could you do it to me with a certain little children's nanny behind my back for the past 3 months?
How long have you known about me in Spain?
Oh, what am I, a moron? I'm sorry, George. I had enough some time ago. I'm sorry it had to happen today. On your birthday, but there it is. It's over.
Okie dokie. Everything's looking good, good, good. I just spoke to Sherry Hughes. You're having lunch tomorrow at my maison. Hackman's on hold, and everybody's happy. What happened? They arrest our tax advisor? What?
George and I are getting a divorce. Perhaps you could see to it when you have a moment.
George, is this safe?
Yeah, you better do as she says, Howard.
Well, I'm so sorry. Are you okay? How are you feeling?
About how anyone would feel whose life has just been turned into Dante's Inferno, you know.
Right. That was the one he did after Gremlins, yeah? Howard! Coming! Catch you later.
George? What's happening? What's wrong with Chelsea?
She knows. It's all over. She found someone else, too.
You're kidding. Oh, that's tremendous news. Oh, is it anyone we know?
What? I'll tell you later.
Oh, what a terrific birthday present. Oh, gee, listen, we have to celebrate. We'll go right into Morton's where the world can see us and we don't have to hide our faces anymore. Oh, you stay right here and finish opening your presents. I'll be right back.
Oh, God almighty.
Open your presents.
Yes. Why don't you do that?
Happy birthday, George. You may recall we worked together 5 years ago on A Dog in Milwaukee. I was the guy who flew past your bedroom window on a log during the hurricane sequence. I thought you might be interested to see a video of my recent work with a view to... Oh! Oh, dear! Oh! I regret to say that by the time your video reached me, it had been so badly damaged in the mail, it was totally unwatchable.
Right, what else have we got? Many happy returns. I hope this will be your best birthday ever. P.S. I wrote the enclosed entirely with you in mind. It's about a dumb schmuck who can't get laid. So he decides to...
Oh! Oh, my goodness! Oh! I am so sorry. I accidentally ripped up your script into a million pieces.
Next. Dear George, I thought you might be interested to hear the enclosed tape. It's a little thing for radio. A few of us record... Oh, might I?
I don't think so.
Oh, no. Yeah, while listening to your tape, I inadvertently mangled and scrunched it all up beyond repair. It was just one of those unfortunate accidents.
It's a little thing for radio. A few was recorded 25 years ago.
It was recorded 25 years ago.
Called
Four Angry Men for the BBC Home Service. Series 4, Show 5. I seem to remember it's the one episode that was missing from your collection. Well, it's taken me a while, George, and a lot of detective work. But I finally tracked down this mad Angry's fan in New South Wales who has every show we ever made. I certainly had a good laugh listening to it again. Remember the exploding choir boys? Anyway, hope everything's great with you, George. Still hoping we might meet up again one day and maybe swap old times. Lots of love to you and the family. Iris.
Oh, God. Happy birthday.
Bubba's in the basement, mixing up his metaphors. Bowels elongated, sings like he's constipated. Man in the spotlight, deep snarl, lip curled, steel-eyed head whirl. Looking for a new world, look out, kid. They're making a bid. They don't know shit, but they know that you're a hit. You better look the other way, sit tight, hold up. Guys with the big bucks, contracts rolled up. Time to make your mind up, you already sold out. Oh, son, here, son, there. Take advice on what to wear. Beware, be square. Declare you cut your hair. Don't stare, don't stare. Get bland, get blind. Go back, get behind. Turn your back on mankind. Look out, Bob's about to change jobs. Calling out your plan tour. Looking to expand more. Holding out your hand for maybe 50 grand more. Learn to ditch bands. Be a rich man. You just lost sight of the things you used to stand for.
That was a parody of a song by, was it Bob Dylan?
It was himself, central to the iconoclasm of the 60s. The rolling back of the accepted order of things. It was typical of Felix's satirical insight that, rather than embrace Dylan's call to arms, he should seek to see through him, to presuppose with this extraordinary telescopic vision the de-radicalization of Dylan's work many years later.
Absolutely, an astonishing foresight.
I never saw it that way at all. I think he was sending up the fans themselves, who he knew at some point would turn on him, like they always do. Because as soon as you start to move forward, to grow up, basically, they see it as an act of treason.
You mean...
Getting back to the last time you saw him, Iris, yesterday afternoon, what sort of frame of mind was he in? The image we all have of Felix Fox, chiefly from years ago, I suppose, because he hadn't been much in the public eye for a while, had he, is of a rather bitter, cynical chap, an incredibly sharp, inventive mind, but not an easy person to get to know. There was a perverseness about Felix that had got worse since he lost his wife 3 years ago, which, in a way, I found endearing. Because you knew very well that the scathing wit was all a defense mechanism. It was a natural resource he had, but it was like a tap that he couldn't turn off. But he was vulnerable, underneath, like the rest of us. You'd spent most of the day with him. 9 to 5, 3 days a week. I'd try and get his life into some sort of order. Yesterday was just like any other, really. Hello, 573 22. I'm sorry? No, there's no one called Mr. Chutney at this address. I think you must have the wrong number. I'm sorry? Oh, in the advert for Chutney, I do beg your pardon. He's actually just popped out to post a letter. I didn't imagine he'll be... Sorry? Oh, dear, where was this? Yes, I'm afraid he does rather fly off the handle when something annoys him. It's one of the... And now you can't get it out, presumably. Stuck in there. Right. Perhaps if you tried threading a very thick piece of rope inside or something...
If that's the woman who lives next to the postbox, tell her it's time she had a brain implant.
Sorry. No. Just his secretary, thank God.
It's a highly specialised operation involving a team of surgeons and a pinball machine.
Yes, the minute he comes back. I'm sure he'll be desperate to ring up and apologise. And I'm sorry about the whole incident. I will. Bye. She's threatening to report you for cruelty to animals.
It ran up the leg of my trousers. I thought it was a rat.
Oh, how could you possibly mistake a tiny 3-week-old kitten for a rat?
Very easily. They're both 6 inches long, covered in fur, and they sink their teeth into your sodding leg. If a guy burst into your house with a knife, you're not going to think he's come round to prepare a letter.
And that was a good enough reason, was it, to pick it up and stuff it in the pillar box? With no more collections till 8 o'clock Monday morning, how is she supposed to get it out?
It's very simple. She keeps posting letters. If it reaches the top, then it climbs out.
You could call her up and say you're sorry.
I could have a shave by sticking my face in an electric fan, but it doesn't appeal to me, Iris.
7:40. God! I'd better look sharp. Oh, by the way, Kieran Lander called just after you went out.
He said my script was a pile of unadulterated gobshite.
He said it was possibly too adventurous for a late night on Channel 4, and he was... Yes, I suppose that was the gist of it.
Thank you, Kieran. Another way to hurt me is to play tubular bells inside my underpants. You got my note to Vernon?
I have, yes.
And give my love to Larry, won't you? And tell him a stroke is just God's way of saying I'm immortal and you're not.
You could come with us. Have a night off for a change.
Thank you, Alice. I don't need 4 hours of sitting round the table listening to Vernon dissect Proust and explain how a blast furnace works. I preferred him when he was a drunken neurotic, someone I could relate to. Now he's just a dictionary and a shark.
I married Vernon because he was the first man I ever met who understood women, who understood their needs, who could get inside them. And don't make the obvious comment. It's called sensitivity.
Right. Imagine if you'd married George and spent the rest of your life by pouring Bel Air rubbing soothing oils into his foreskin. Oh, goodness, is that the time? It's quarter to his next divorce.
Yes. Well, the closest we ever got was having simulated sex dressed as giant pandas, for which I am profoundly grateful. But I never went through the George Simon sausage machine like every other dippy female that stands his spell. Now he's a professional reprobate, and from what you hear, he hasn't changed much. So don't get me started on George, because I don't want to discuss the man.
Right. And be glad I stopped him getting you in his clutches when I did.
Exactly. And now I've lost my keys. Right. I'll see you Monday.
Bye, Iris.
Bye. Be glad you what?
What?
What did you just say?
When?
About getting me his clutches.
Who?
You said you stopped George getting me in his clutches. When was this?
Whenever. Once.
When?
I thought you didn't want to discuss him.
Tell me about his clutches.
Oh, God, I don't remember. Oh, when was it, Alf? That Christmas special we were filming in Scotland, clubbing debutantes to bet for their fur coats. George went over the top as usual. He was rushed to hospital with concussion. He was worried sick that day that he'd nearly killed you. And that was when it all came out, you know, how it was time he took women seriously. Like there he was, screwing everything south of the Arctic Circle, and all the time you were there, right under his nose.
My God. I don't want to hear what you said to him.
Fine.
What did you say to him?
I said, so's a bogey, it doesn't mean you have to marry it.
George is thinking of proposing to me, and you talked him out of it. Is that what you're telling me?
I didn't want to see you hurt. Like all the rest. That got chewed up in the sausage machine, remember?
I was that close to his sausage machine. Right. Well, thank you, Felix, for sorting out my life for me. Someday I'll try and find a way to repay you.
Have a good time at the Zach's residence.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be a magical experience.
Okay. Lots to do. Pen. Paper. Gun. Bullets. Dear Iris, by the time you find this note, I will have shot myself. Brackets. Make sure the Guardian spell that right. I've decided to cut the rest of my life as it wasn't getting laughs. I could go into detail about my increasing despair at man's capacity for political apathy and social indolence, but sod it. Suffice to say, it's time to get out before things get any worse. Love to everyone. Felix. Life member of the Light Entertainment Leper Colony. Now the tricky bit. What do we think? Two should be enough. You're not going to be around to fire a third. Here we go, then. Oh, the secret of great comedy. Timing. Hang on.
Hang on. Good evening. We left an envelope for all the children.
Oh, right. I don't know where that'll be. My secretary probably filed it somewhere. Can you hang on just a second and I'll be with you?
No problem. Now, quick, why is it the kitchen?
Which way?
Go upstairs. It's probably what's back in the bedroom.
So I keep him talking. I can't find it. Let me just write you a check.
Oh, that's really generous. Thank you.
Is it cold out there in August?
I know, it was quite mild earlier on.
Come in a second, I'll see if I can find you a thick jumper. Like Daley Thompson. It'll warm you up a bit.
Oh, you're so kind.
Oh, my God! I don't believe this!
What the fuck?
Is this the coincidence of all time or what?
Jake, you are out of your trick.
How did you get up there? What is this? What's going on?
For God's sake, Viv! Don't you know who this guy is?
Oh, you mean the...
Yes!
Look at a Sony commercial.
No! Well, yes, but that's not who... Felix Fox. The Four Angry Men. Mr. Fox, I've got to shake your hand, can I? Please.
Are you going to tell me what the hell you are doing in my house?
For God's sake, let's leg it before he calls a filth.
He won't call a filth. Who do you think he is? Four Angry Men. It was like a national rebellion against the whole thing. The obscenity of the system. Oh, God. Viv, I've been waiting all my life to meet this man.
Is that right? Well, you better come through then. We can sit down and discuss this.
Oh, that'd be brilliant.
He's seriously weird.
Yeah, isn't it weird? I mean, I grew up with this man. Forget your parents and teachers. These are the guys you're tuned into. I'm sorry, but this man is a genius. I'm not bullshitting you now, Mr. Fox. You're the reason I became a comedian. It was all because of you.
Oh, right. You're a comedian.
Well, I mean, I'm between jobs at the moment, obviously, but... You know, I've done a few gigs, you know.
Yeah.
A few pubs around town.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've heard of that new one that's just been opened by Margaret and Dennis Thatcher, called the Cronin Anchor. It's, yeah, well, there's a build-up to that. I mean, no joke can be judged in isolation. Right, you said that once. I mean, comedy's all about context.
Yeah. You never quite find the right context for that one, have you, Jake? I mean, I really don't know what you're playing at here, but I'm getting out of this place now. Are you coming or not?
All right, if you want to go, go. No one's keeping you.
And you're going to stay here, are you?
Right.
Well, sod you then, I'm off.
I don't think so, actually, do you?
Oh, God.
What?
He's got guns, Jake. What did I say to you? This is you done this. If you catch a bleeding trap shot...
Oh, God! Oh, you had me going there for one moment. You really had me going.
For God's sake, Jake, don't mess with him. He's balmy enough to shoot.
It's not loaded. You think he'd have a loaded gun in the house, Felix Fox?
Well, why wouldn't he?
Would Dandy carry a knuckle duster? Oh, God. Felix, you know, you really... I mean, the old hairs on the back of my neck. You mad bastard. What is that? It's a prop. It's just a prop. Right from one of the old shows.
You make a lot of assumptions about me, Jake, which could be very dangerous.
I've got it right. Jugged underpants in a white wine sauce.
What?
Jugged underpants in a white wine sauce. That mad restaurant sketch. You always said it was one of your favourite routines. Only you couldn't think of a way of getting out of it. So in the end, the waiter just shoots you. On the principle, sudden violence always gets a laugh, right?
Right.
And that is the actual gun that you used in the show. Oh, you see this, Viv? You're looking at the actual prop from one of TV's all-time classic. Hey, look. It's got all the videos as well. Oh. Look, the first ever show he's got, Four Angry Men, Series 1, Show 1. Oh, can we watch this? Oh, Felix. Oh, Felix, we've got to watch this. She should watch this. Right, Viv, watch and learn.
Where's your video?
Oh, fine, Jane. Don't stand on ceremony. You just make yourself at home. You want the remote control? It's just here.
Oh, geez, this is like... I can't tell you.
You may have heard the leader of the opposition the other
day outlining
his plans
back
for energy beginning.
Oh, God, in the meantime, we have to watch this figure get up there.
I know what you mean.
By saving his breath, he talks about more investment to harness wind power. Well, one of his House of Commons speeches alone would heat every house in Llandudno.
I don't believe this. These are my lines. What do you mean?
Now, it's not my intention to question the...
25 years ago I wrote this speech about Quentin Hogg.
Nor is it true to say that the Right Honourable Gentleman lacks charisma. I'm sorry. Who was I talking about?
It wasn't funny then. We cut the whole routine and threw it in the bin. How the hell is this...
Douglas, bloody dear. The great plagiarist of London.
By his own account, when he went to Washington last week, he was given the full red carpet treatment.
And he was thrown across the floor and the President walked all over him.
I gather he was thrown across the floor and the President walked all over him.
Yes.
He says he is confident his proposals can get the country running again.
So can an outbreak of dysentery.
But then so can an outbreak of dysentery.
God, what a bastard! What do you do when something like this happens, Mr. Fox?
What do you do? I don't know, Jane. It was always the same. Guy has all the creative ethic of Herman Munster.
But, I mean, you can't let him get away with this. He can't do that.
Ah, sure, for a bunch of 30-year-old jokes that never meant anything in the first place. Anyway, what do I know? I don't exist anymore as a rational absolute. I'm just a guy who advertises chutney.
What do you mean? You can't say that.
What?
They never meant anything.
What did it mean? We were just having a laugh, that's all. To stay sane. Now, maybe it's time you both went. I've got one or two things to take care of this evening.
Oh, I think that'd be a really good idea, don't you, Jake?
Will you shut up and sit down? I mean, I know that's not true. It's like you can't possibly say that the gospel according to Mr. Pastry didn't speak volumes about what a joke religion is, you know.
A religion is a joke, right, but don't let a joke become religion, Jake. You'll make a lot of trouble for yourself.
And what about, I mean, right, a key sketch to me. When you played that guy who was trying to change society by taking it back to Marx and Spencer's. Now, that said everything about art as a political weapon.
Oh, right. Or you can try laying debt charges in the House of Commons B-Day. That's a good political weapon. You think you could change the way a Prime Minister thinks with satire? Try putting his balls in a bench vice. You know, I'm glad we did something that happened to reach people, but just understand, it wasn't for you. It was for us.
Yeah, but...
Hey, look. It's all getting heavy, and I haven't eaten yet. Have you eaten? I was just going to order up some takeaway when you guys arrived. Let's not argue on an empty stomach, okay? So what do you fancy? I've got some of the menus here somewhere if you want to pick some stuff out.
Well...
Sure.
Right. Yeah, we'll go for some of that, won't we, Viv?
Okay. What have we got here now? Any preferences at all?
I don't know. What do you fancy?
Well, let's see. The chimpanzee's prostates look rather tempting tonight. Katie Boyle on a bed of nails. No, I'll only regret that in the morning. yes, here we are. I think for a change today, I'm going to plump for the jugged underpants in a white wine sauce.
On or off the testicles, sir?
Off the testicle, please.
And how would you like them cooked, sir?
Over a burning effigy of Bamba Gascoigne, please.
And to follow?
What is this dish here, the edentato molto congesto?
Oh, that's a giant sloth with two apricots up each snout, sir. Lightly flattered on a late-night talk show. And then dropped from the shadow cabinet as front bench spokesman on education.
Can I have two of those?
I'll do carving, sir. What about some ice cream?
What flavours do you have?
Koala, yam, yeti, fruit bat, jellyfish limpet, lamprey, fairy liquid, beetroot, bitumen, and Bing Crosby, sir.
No tetracycline?
Not on a Wednesday, sir.
Right. And what do you recommend to finish off with?
The euthanasia is very good today.
Then I'll have that.
And how would you like it done, sir?
With a couple of bullets fired from a .5 Magnum, please.
You're in luck, sir. We just have two left.
Oh, my God!
Oh, no. No.
No! It's not real. He told me it wasn't real.
I think you'll find it was real.
Oh, my God. He said it was just a prop.
No, Jake, you said it was a prop.
But he knew. He knew. The end of that sketch that I'd pick it up and... I mean, why would he do that?
You don't know, Jake. Read this.
Dear Iris, by the time you read this, I would have shot myself.
Oh, you bastard. You did this deliberately.
Now, I think it'd be a really smart move to leave a nice gentleman in peace, don't you? To hang on to this note in case we ever need it and just quietly get the hell out of this place.
I thought it was a prop.
Come on!
Bastard. He made me think it was a prop.
Oh, God.
Congratulations, Felix Fox. You have been selected to take part in another edition of Celebrity Goggling, introduced by me, Algernon French, wearing Diamante earrings. Now, for £3, 17 and sixpence, can you identify this well-known person treating a serious throat infection?
Is it me, Nancy war criminal Adolf Eichmann?
I'm sorry. It was actually his twin sister, Doris, so I can only give you half.
Thank you. I'll take that half in once.
What's happened?
Oh.
You okay?
Yes, I just spilled cocoa down my shirt.
You don't drink cocoa?
No, I just spilled it down my shirt.
You sound a bit croaky.
Yes, I'm expecting to croak any minute.
Listen, I've got your letter here, which, it's a great idea.
Okay,
I think it's a terrific idea, but,
You don't need to apologise.
No, it's not a question of that. I'll call you tomorrow. We can discuss it then. I've got a dash. Give Iris a big slobbery one for me, won't you? And keep smiling, you miserable old sod. I love you.
Please hang up and try again. Please hang up and try again. Please hang up and try again.
Please. In the end, I don't think anyone truly understood him or his work. I don't think he ever really understood himself or wanted to. And now, I suppose they'll start writing about it all over again, trying to define what he was about. And it'll be full of contradictions, the way he was. The last thing he ever wanted was to become a saint. And though he'll always be remembered for bringing us laughter, he was also a man who loved the arts, who adored poetry and literature and fine music. And in particular, there's one choral work that was always a firm favourite, which... in his memory, we all felt it fitting to play to you here today.
Angry Old Men by David Renwick, Iris was played by Annette Crosby, Vernon by Peter Bowles, Douglas, Bernard Cribbins, George, N. Rytel, and Felix, Bill Wallace, with Lucy Tregear, Ben Gutteridge, Catherine Hunt, Helen Atkinson-Wood, Carolyn Backhouse, Brett Fancy, Peter Harlow, Christopher Ryan, and Sarah Crowe. The director was Nigel Bryant.